that the Adventure Society will handle it when and how we see fit. Should he further intervene, either openly or covertly, then the City of Greenstone will be in violation of their arrangement with the Adventure Society. All adventuring activity will then cease until a new arrangement has been negotiated, confirmed, and enacted. Are you certain you want to take it that far? He's not stupid enough to renegotiate terms before the original agreement runs out, Arella said. Not with me. But do you want to draw that arrow from the quiver? Genevieve asked. You can only make that threat once, or he'll have grounds to go over you to the central branches. I need Lucian Lamprey gone. So long as he's in charge of the Magic Society here, trying to clean up our own house is bailing water from a sinking boat. Until the hole is plugged, the best we can do is stop things from getting worse. And you think this will get rid of him? If things drag out for long enough. He's a man unused to restraining his appetites. Sooner or later, he will make a mistake we can use to oust him. When his patience comes to its limit, he will act. So long as the thief remains at large, long enough for him to do so. Yes, which is why catching her must remain the responsibility of Iron Rankers, with no interference from the Duke's people. Madam Director, do you know who this thief is? Of course not, Arella said. That would be unprofessional.
We're getting close, Humphrey called out over the sound of the airboat. He pointed at a rise of earth in the marsh, and Clive steered the airboat up onto it. Humphrey was guiding them with a crystal orb that lit up in the direction of the badge they were tracking. He stepped off the airboat onto the soggy bank, Jason and Clive following after. They followed the tracking orb onto higher, drier ground, Jason hacking their way through tight scrub with a machete. The blade was enchanted for the task, a common tool that every adventurer learned to take into the Delta. They progressed until Humphrey called them to a stop. Oh, he said. All three looked at the orb in Humphrey's hand. The indicator light was pointing straight down into the wet, heavy earth. Chapter 85. Because I'm an Adventurer. I couldn't find anything even resembling an entrance, Jason said as the trio regrouped. The others shook their heads, having fared no better.
Probably some kind of extended lair, Clive said. A lot of creatures in this environment, monster and animal both, are just as happy in the water as out. Some like to dig burrows and stash prey for later consumption. The entrance could be in any direction, and is probably underwater.
Any suggestions? Humphrey asked.
We could try a simple ritual used for digging wells, Clive said. I'm sure I have one in a book somewhere in my storage space.
I don't know that ritual, Jason said. Wasn't in my ritual magic skill book.
People make skill books with knowledge practical for adventurers, Clive said. Not for farmers. It's one of the many reasons that skill books aren't proper magical instruction. They only give the flimsiest theoretical grounding.
Jason groaned. You sound like Farah.
Really?
Clive asked, his head perking up.
Did she say something about me?
Jason wearily shook his head. Why didn't you suggest a magic tunnel in the first place? He asked.
My concern would be collapsing whatever underground space we break into, Clive said. The ground is incredibly wet. Whatever lair or burrow is down there may be full of water already, or our tunnel could collapse the whole thing.
I don't see a better option, Humphrey said.
Time to pull out the old bag of salt, then, Jason said. You know, I'm still on the bag I took from these cannibals I killed. I should practice rituals more.
Don't bother with the salt. I'll sort it out.
Clive closed his eyes and took a slow, deep breath. Nothing in the surroundings changed, but both Jason and Humphrey felt a stillness come over them.
Human has used mana equilibrium. Ambient magic has entered a harmonious state. The next spell cast in this area will cost reduced mana, and the harmonious state will be disrupted.
That's interesting, Humphrey said, looking around. Jason knew that Humphrey's perception power, dragon sight, allowed him to see magic.
You're smoothing out the ambient magic to make rituals easier, Humphrey said. You seem very spell-oriented for a human.
I venerate the celestial book, Clive said. I received a blessing that triggered a racial gift evolution. It changed the human special attack affinity to a spell affinity, like the elves.
Nice, Humphrey said.
I didn't understand any of that, Jason said.
Then you know what it's like to talk to you, Clive said, and Humphrey nodded his agreement.
What's the celestial book? Jason asked. Is that the god of books or something?
It's one of the great astral beings, Clive said. They're similar to gods, but instead of belonging to a specific world, they exist between worlds in the deep astral. You could almost describe them as gods to the gods, although you wouldn't catch any gods saying that.
So you took a look at the gods, Jason said, and basically asked to see their manager?
That's not even close to how it works, Clive said.
What about that racial gift evolution you mentioned? Jason asked. A lot of religious folk aren't big on evolution, where I come from.
Clive looked at Jason, then turned to Humphrey.
You explain while I look up this ritual, Clive said, pulling a book from his storage space.
Unlike Humphrey's or Jason's storage, where objects were pulled from thin air, Clive's storage space involved a floating ring of runes, in the middle of which a small portal formed.
You must be constantly learning new things, coming from a whole different world, Humphrey said to Jason.
You have no idea, Jason said. I haven't even learned all the fruit yet, let alone the magic stuff.
Well, Humphrey said, every race has 6 racial gifts. For humans, like Clive and myself, that is an affinity for special attacks, and our essences advance more rapidly than others. Then there are the latent powers that adapt to our essences.
Yeah, I heard about the XP boost, Jason said. Seems OP.
What? Humphrey asked, confusion creasing his brow.
Never mind, Jason said. Just keep going.
Racial power evolution is where a racial gift changes, Humphrey said. Any racial gift can change. The latent human abilities are essentially blank slates that are guaranteed to do so.
So any of my outworlder abilities could evolve?
They could, Humphrey said. Usually there's some kind of trigger, often a traumatic event. Big monster fights where you barely make it out alive would be the one you see the most. Sometimes it just happens over time, though. You do something enough that it becomes a part of you, and your powers actually change so it does.
Habits really have a way of taking hold, then.
Exactly, Humphrey said. Have you met anyone from the Smolder race?
No, but I've seen them around.
Well, they have natural affinities for earth and fire, Humphrey said. There's a guy on an adventuring team with my parents. He's a Smolder. He has the wind essence, and eventually, his earth affinity evolved to an air affinity.
So what about Clive and that blessing? Jason asked.
Gods can give their followers a blessing, which triggers a racial gift evolution, Humphrey said.
I guess whatever that thing Clive worships can do it too.
That one was actually new to me.
Great astral beings, Jason mused, remembering something he heard months earlier.
Hey, Clive?
What?
Clive asked, looking up from a book.
That great astral thing you worship.
I didn't say worship, Clive said. I said venerate. There's a difference.
That's fine, Jason said. I was just wondering, though, would you describe it as an ineffable ancient from beyond reality?
Clive thought it over for a moment.
That's not how I describe it, he said. But I can see how someone would, if they didn't know what they were talking about. Why?
I heard Cressida Vane talking about it. Apparently her son was into something like that.
That makes sense, Clive said. Landemir was an astral magic specialist, like me. We often end up paying more attention to the great astral beings than the local gods. We set our sights higher, you might say.
And people call me a heretic, Jason said.
Here it is,
Clive said, eyes back on his book. I haven't used this book in years.
He started waving his hand like an orchestra conductor, and a glowing diagram drew itself just above the ground.
The ability I used earlier was a racial power I awakened for the magic essence, Clive explained. It balances out the ambient magic, so you don't need to adjust your ritual circle.
The diagram of golden light continued to be drawn out.
I'm drawing the circle using a rune essence ability, Clive explained. It lets me draw out magic circles and use any required materials directly from my storage space.
I can see how that would be handy, Jason said.
You might want to stand back, Clive said. I first picked this up to use on the family farm, and it makes something of a mess.
Jason and Humphrey did as instructed. Soon after, mud shot up into the air with a loud, wet flapping sound, scattering over the area. Jason conjured his cloak and wrapped it around himself, any mud that reached it sliding easily off. Clive, being much closer, was sprayed with mud, but it struck some kind of force field and fell away. Humphrey had no such protection and ended up speckled with dark mud. All three went up to stand around the new hole, looking down. It was a cylinder, neatly carved out of the wet earth. It was quite deep, 5 or 6 meters, Jason guessed, and a couple of meters wide. At the bottom, instead of breaching some underground burrow, the hole ended with a floor of large, neatly fitted bricks of green stone.
Is that a weird thing to find at the bottom of a hole we randomly dug?
Jason asked.
Everything around here seems kind of weird to me, so I can't judge all that well. This seems like it might be extra weird, though.
This is definitely extra weird, Humphrey said. Any ideas, Clive?
None, Clive said. Anything that deep around here should be filled with water. I get the feeling it isn't, though.
We have to check it out, right? Humphrey asked.
You mean the secret underground building we found?
Jason asked.
Of course we have to check it out.
Should we tell someone? Humphrey asked. The Magic Society, maybe.
If we tell the Magic Society, Clive said, then we won't be the ones to explore it. Lucian Lamprey will give it to someone that buys him political points.
There is a safety issue, though, Humphrey said. Someone already died down there.
How about this? Jason said. We came out here to find the person who died. Let's do that, and then tell people where we found him.
That sounds fair, Clive said.
All right, Humphrey said, clearly eager to be convinced.
How do we get in?
I have some acid that melts through most varieties of local stone, Jason said.
The two turned to look at him.
What? Jason asked.
Why would you have that? Humphrey asked.
Because I'm an adventurer, Jason said. I have all the basic adventuring gear, acid, rope, pitons, a tarp, some empty sacks, a 10-foot pole.
Why would you have all that? Clive asked.
Flammable oil, a couple of empty scroll cases, a rope ladder, a regular ladder, a tent, a magic lantern.
Can't you see in the dark? Humphrey asked.
A non-magic lantern, which was oddly hard to find. Caltrops, empty vials, block and tackle, a big ball of string.
Can you please just take out the acid? Clive asked.
I could, Jason said. I was thinking we might need to set up a way out, though. I don't suppose anyone happened to bring a nice, long rope ladder?
Oh, wait, I did,
because I prepared, like an adventurer.
I did bring rope, Humphrey said. While Humphrey anchored Jason's rope ladder to the ground using some long metal stakes Jason also had, Jason started tipping acid down the hole.
Shouldn't you go down to the bottom for that?
Humphrey asked, looking over.
No, he shouldn't,
Clive said, shortly before gas started fuming out of the hole. Jason and Clive both stepped back. After the fumes cleared, Jason did the same again, then a third time. Looking down, he could see a hole bored right through the bricks. Leaving Humphrey's familiar to guard the top of the hole, the three adventurers climbed down through the hole on the rope ladder, ending up in a brick tunnel, tall and wide. It was completely empty,
with no indication of moisture penetration. Motes of starlight emerged from Jason's cloak, floating around them and lighting up the tunnel.
"That's pretty," Humphrey said. "You have that, and you brought two lanterns?" Clive asked.
"Preparedness," Jason said. "What about our guy?" Humphrey took out the tracking stone they had been following to the dead adventurer and, since he would be at the front, tossed it to Clive.
"That's unexpected," Clive said.
"What is it?" Humphrey asked.
"The tracking stone," Clive said.
"It's still pointing straight down."
Chapter 86. Some Kind of Secret.
"This construction completely predates the founding of Greenstone," Clive said, examining the side of the passage they were in.
"Maybe if we look around," Jason said, "we might even find something more interesting than a blank brick wall."
"The construction itself is fascinating enough," Clive said. "Are you familiar with the Sky River Aqueduct? The building techniques are identical. There's no mortar connecting these bricks, yet they form a watertight seal. Remember that we're under a swamp right now."
"That explains the stale air," Jason said, making a distasteful expression.
"It must have been tricky to build," Humphrey said.
"Beyond tricky," Clive said. "Even with powerful and sophisticated magic, it would have been an outrageous undertaking."
"Maybe it wasn't built under a swamp," Jason said. "If the same people who built this also built the big aqueduct, then they might have made this place when there was no delta. Before the aqueduct, the river would have spilled into Sky River Gorge, right?"
"That's a good point," Clive said.
"We should get moving," Humphrey said. "We need to find a way down if we're going to figure out what happened to this adventurer." Clive nodded his agreement, taking out a recording stone and throwing it up to float over his head. It joined the other crystal floating there, which continually restored mana. Humphrey had the same essence ability, both men acquiring it through the magic essence.
"I'm going to record everything we see," Clive said.
They set off down the corridor, the floating motes of light from Jason's cloak illuminating the way forward. What they found was a large complex buried underground, with very little to indicate its purpose. Every room and every corridor were empty. Small chambers and large halls with nothing but bare brick surfaces.
"Everything has to have been taken away," Clive said. "Even if this place has been here for centuries, there would be at least remnants of furnishings."
"This complex is at least the size of a large village," Humphrey marveled. "We haven't even found a way down yet."
"It has to be the site of some massive undertaking," Clive said. "No one builds all this for temporary occupation."
Their exploration brought them to a stairwell, but the brick stairs were warped and molded together. It looked like the steps had been melted and reset from a staircase to a ramp, covered in spiked protrusions.
"Some kind of stone-shaping power," Humphrey said, crouching to look closer. "These stairs were altered to impede anyone looking to go down them. I think this place was attacked."
"Maybe whoever they were defending against plundered everything away," Jason said. "It might explain why there's nothing left."
"Do we try and use these stairs?" Clive asked. "They don't look pleasant to navigate, and given how big this place is, there should be another way down."
"The others might be like this," Humphrey said.
"We have time to check," Jason said. "That looks entirely too pointy for my liking." They eventually found another set of stairs, this time in their original condition. They descended deeper underground, the stairwell switching back with multiple landings before they reached the next level down. Stepping into another wide corridor, the difference to the floor above was obvious. The walls, floor, even ceiling, were marred with signs of battle, scorch marks, long gouges torn into the brickwork. A wild confrontation of essence users had clearly taken place. There was debris scattered out, mostly stone torn from the wall. As they moved cautiously forward, they looked around at the damage.
"This is incredible," Clive said. "Almost nothing is known about the history of the region prior to the original Greenstone colony. There may actually be answers somewhere in here."
Side rooms off the corridor had been stripped clean, like the floor above.
Some were empty and untouched. Others bore the marks of battle. In one of them they found a pair of skeletons, although with no sign of clothing or equipment.
"These are too old to be our adventurer, right?" Humphrey said.
Clive pulled out the tracking stone, which still pointed downward.
"Based on the angle," Clive said, "I would guess one more floor down, if it's as far below this one as we're below the one above."
Humphrey crouched down to examine the skeletons.
"The short, broad skeleton is a runic," he said. "You can still see faint traces of the natural runes on their bones. The big one is a draconian, from the skull shape."
"Draconian?" Jason asked.
"They're a race that claims to be descended from dragons," Clive said, "although the claim is not fully substantiated."
"They have scales and breathe fire," Humphrey said. "I'd call that fairly substantiated." He panned his eyes over the ancient skeletons.
"You'd think there would be rotted clothes or old boots or something. There's no rusty old weapons, no tools or jewelry. These bodies were stripped."
"This whole place was stripped," Jason said. "It's like whoever invaded didn't want to leave a trace. Not of who they were, or even of who they were attacking."
"Then why leave the bodies?" Humphrey asked.
"Why not just take the bodies instead of stripping them and leaving them behind?"
"No one likes carting bodies around," Jason said. "No one you'd want to make friends with anyway. Maybe they were convinced that just bodies wouldn't tell people anything."
"It could have been due to some religious practice," Clive suggested. "A lot of religions have taboos around corpses."
"Perhaps there are more bodies deeper in," Humphrey said. "Maybe they'll have answers." They continued exploring, finding more bodies that offered no more clues than the others. They came from every civilization-building species. Humans, elves, and Leonids, Celestines, Runic, Smolder, and Draconians. They were starting to get a sense of how things were laid out, based on the two floors they had explored, and ended up standing in front of a wall.
"More earth-shaping," Humphrey said. "This should be the stairwell, shouldn't it?"
"I think so," Clive said.
The wall was made up of warped green stone, which had clearly spent time as a fluid before hardening. They continued searching, discovering another wall of warped stone.
"I'll try and cut through with my big sword, unless someone has a better idea," Humphrey said. "Do you have any more of that acid, Jason?"
"I used it all getting us in here," Jason said.
"So much for being prepared," Humphrey said, which got a snort of laughter from Clive.
"Oh, you've got jokes," Jason said.
He took a sledgehammer from his inventory, letting the head drop heavily to the floor.
"Item, Stonebreaker Hammer. Iron rank, common. A hammer designed to be effective at breaking rocks. Tool, hammer. Effect, weight increases in accordance with the strength of the wielder."
"Try that," Jason said.
Humphrey picked up the hammer, hefting it to test the weight.
"I think I might break something this light," he said, then frowned, hefting it again.
"No, there it is."
"You were saying something about preparation?" Jason asked.
Clive shook his head.
"This thing gets heavier based on who holds it, right?"
Humphrey asked.
"Yep," Jason said.
"Then how good a preparation is it when you're not very strong?" Humphrey asked.
"That's why I prepared you."
"Are you calling me a tool?"
"Humphrey," Jason said, placing an earnest hand on the big man's shoulder. "You're far more useful and versatile than some ordinary tool. You're a complete tool."
"I'm also holding a hammer," Humphrey said.
Jason skittered back.
"As you were, mate."
Clive stood next to Jason as they watched Humphrey hammer away at the wall.
"That mouth of yours is going to get the cream kicked out of you someday," Clive said.
"Been there, done that," Jason said. "You can live your life avoiding consequences or accepting them. I tried the first way in my old world, and I'm trying the other here."
"And how's that working out?"
"It feels good," Jason said. "Wouldn't recommend it without healing magic, though."
Cripes, he's putting a dent in that wall. Humphrey's hammer blows were crashing into the wall with the regularity of an aggressive metronome. The stone was covered with impact marks, all clustered together, spiderweb cracks spreading out. In short order, the hammer breached a hole in the wall, which let out a wave of wet air, stinking with rot. All three hurried away from the hole.
"That is foul," Clive said.
"It's not dissolving monster bad," Jason said, "but it's bad." Humphrey looked disconsolately at the hole in the wall.
"We have to go down there," he said unhappily.
Jason nodded. "I wouldn't want that to be my final resting place," he said. "We have an adventurer to bring home."
"How did they get down there?" Humphrey pondered. "It looks like all the entrances are sealed up."
"That smell means the water got in somewhere," Clive said. "Best guess, some monster burrowed all the way down here, found a hole in the lower level, and made it their lair. They killed the adventurer up on the surface, then dragged them down into whatever entrance the monster made for itself."
"Makes sense," Jason said. "We were expecting some kind of worm monster." Humphrey took a deep, unhappy breath.
"Enough stalling," he said. "I'm going to bring down that wall."
Soon there was enough of a hole for a person to pass through, and Humphrey leaned in for a look.
"Looks like the stairs were reshaped to make this wall," Humphrey said. "Can we get some light in here?"
One of the floating motes of light drifted through the hole, and Humphrey looked again.
"Yeah, we'll have to drop down," he said.
They took another of Jason's metal stakes, and Humphrey hammered it into the floor to anchor a rope. Jason was the first one through the hole, drifting down a stairwell now more like an elevator shaft. He stopped when he reached water, flooding the level below. Taking out his 10-foot pole, he tested the depth.
"There's water down here," he called up. "Shallow enough to walk through."
The others slid down the rope, ending up knee-deep in black, icy water.
"I don't care for this," Clive said.
"Look around," Jason said, standing on the surface. "We might find our answers down here."
Like the levels above, the stairwell opened into a wide central corridor. This one was full of debris, piled up on the flooded floor. There were large clumps of mud with roots jutting out, bricks wholly dislodged from the wall, revealing holes into walls of packed earth. The battle damage was even more extensive than the floor above, and they didn't have to look far to see corpses.
"This is barely navigable," Humphrey said. "Where does the tracking stone point?"
"Ahead and to the right," Clive said, stone in hand. "We're on the right level."
"Then stay ready," Humphrey said. "Whatever dragged our adventurer down here is likely to be lurking about." They started searching the semi-submerged level, the water and debris slowing their progress. Clive had the most trouble pushing his feet through the water. Jason stepped lightly on the surface, while Humphrey's strength ploughed through as if the water wasn't even there. They stopped at the entrance to a large hall, one of the largest rooms they had seen.
"Do you feel that?" Humphrey asked.
"Iron rank auras," Jason said.
"Not people or monsters, though," Clive said. "Some kind of enchanted objects. Do we take a look, or keep following the tracking stone?"
"I don't like the idea of leaving an unknown potential threat behind us," Humphrey said.
"Let's check it out then," Jason said. They moved into the hall, Jason's light motes spreading out to illuminate the space. Flooding aside, it looked like the most intact room they had encountered so far. Everything was rotted, rusted, or ripped, but the walls were lined with what looked like the hall's original contents. Vertical banners, blackened with rot, hung from the walls. Stone statues were covered in black fungus and erosion, while weapon racks of metal and wood had largely collapsed as their integrity gave out. At the back of the room were what looked like strange statues. Mannequins of stone with segmented body parts connected by lengths of metal. They were the source of the auras. 28 of them. They were standing in what was clearly meant to be 4 rows of 10. Like soldiers at attention, but a dozen spots were empty.
"Combat dummies," Humphrey said.
"If they're giving off this strong an aura, they're almost certainly active."
"I'd like to take one," Clive said. "You can learn a lot about a culture from their magical objects."
We'll have to put them down first, Humphrey said. They'll probably attack if we get close enough or unleash our auras.
Let me put some spells on you then, Clive said.
He cast two spells each on Jason and Humphrey. The first made them glow briefly with a red-gold light.
Mantle of Retribution, Clive said. Anyone that hits you will take damage.
The second one caused a ring of runes to start floating around them like a slow-motion hula hoop.
Rune Mantle, Clive said. It consumes a random rune to trigger an effect each time you're attacked.
Do you have anything that doesn't require a monster to hit me? Jason asked.
If the monsters can't hit you, Clive said, then what do you need extra magic for?
He's got you there, Humphrey said. Dragon scale armor appeared around him, the giant wing sword appearing in his hands. It was too big to swing in most of the complex, but the hall they were in had plenty of room. Clive pulled back a flap on the front of his robe to reveal a surprisingly ripped torso, covered in runes of blue and green. The runes floated off his body and through the air, where they came together as a ball of light that transformed into Onslow, Clive's rune tortoise familiar. Jason didn't bother pulling out Colin, who would have little impact on the combat dummies. They formed up, Jason and Humphrey in front, Clive in the rear with his familiar.
Ready?
Humphrey asked, looking at the other two.
Ready,
Jason said, drawing his sword. Clive pulled out a magic wand.
Ready.
All right,
Humphrey said.
Aura's out.
You are in the area of an ally's dragon might aura. Your power and spirit attributes are increased. You are in the area of an ally's lord of magic aura. You are continually gaining mana per second. Resistance to mana drain effects is increased.
The combat dummies reacted immediately, all 28 moving towards them. Like Clive, they were hampered by the knee-deep water, but Clive was the first to act. His wand fired a bolt of red and silver light that blasted the arm off a combat dummy. At his side, a bolt of lightning flashed from Onslow's shell. It arced out to one of the peripheral dummies, avoiding Jason and Humphrey. Clive touched a hand to the rune that dimmed on Onslow's shell, feeding mana into it. The rune started to slowly light back up. Humphrey stepped forward, cleaving two dummies into pieces with one strike as he waded into the most clustered group. Red light flashed as the dummies lashed out, Clive's retribution spell blasting chunks from their blunted limbs as they hammered on Humphrey's armor. Jason was more mobile, using hit-and-run strikes as he danced over the surface of the water, building up charges on his sword. Unhindered by the environment, he ran rings around the dummies. When a cluster converged on him, he tossed out a throwing dart from the bandolier on his chest, one of the darts with a red cord. It blasted a dummy apart, and he escaped through the gap. Clive focused on using ranged attacks to pick off outliers before they could swarm the other two. Along with his wand and his familiar, he made judicious use of his essence abilities. He cast a spell and a rune lit up under the water. A pair of dummies wandered over it in pursuit of Jason, and with a snap of Clive's fingers, an explosion blasted them to pieces, spraying water all through the hall. Humphrey alone had torn apart half the dummies by the time he slowed down, most of his special attacks on cooldown. Just strength and skill were enough to keep demolishing dummies, though, and his sword continued to smash them apart. Jason was getting into top gear as Humphrey was winding down, his sword now exploding the dummies on contact. The last few dummies were made short work of. The three regrouped at the end of the fight, chugging potions and eating spirit coins.
Good fight, Humphrey said. I think we work well together. Get a healer on board, and we have the makings of a team.
I don't know about that, Clive said. I've been out on the odd contract with Jason lately, but my research and duties with the Magic Society consume much of my time.
Look where we are, Humphrey said. You're about to sort through what's left of these ancient combat dummies, looking for secrets hidden away for centuries. Can you do that in your study room at the Magic Society?
No, Clive mused as he looked around the hall. That's a not inconsiderable point.
Did those dummies feel familiar to you? Jason asked Humphrey. The way they fought.
They fought like you, Humphrey said. I wasn't sure at first because the water slowed them down, but that was your fighting style, right?
I think so, Jason said. Where did your style come from? Humphrey asked. I'd never seen it until you and I started sparring.
I don't know. It's some kind of secret.
Then let's look around while Clive picks up broken dummy parts, Humphrey said. Maybe we can learn that secret. Chapter 87 Can't Lose.
I think I've found something, Humphrey called out.
The others joined him.
Look at this, Humphrey said, pointing to the wall. See how the mold has grown in the cracks between bricks, all the way down this line?
Secret door? Jason asked.
That's what I'm thinking, Humphrey said.
They glanced at each other with mirrored grins.
Let me take a look, Clive said.
He drew in the air with his finger. A magic circle appeared in the air, traced out in glowing golden lines. When he was done, the circle vanished and the runes started glowing on the wall, in the shape of a door.
There you have it, Clive said.
Nice one, Clive, Jason said.
How do we open it up?
Clive looked over the runes, then reached out to touch several in quick succession. He stepped back as a section of the wall opened out, making ripples in the water. They all stepped into the room beyond, which looked to be some kind of book repository. Unfortunately, most of the room's contents had been taken by rot. There was a breach to open earth in one of the walls, exposing the room to untold years of destructive moisture.
This is a real shame, Clive said, as they looked around.
I'm seeing a lot of residual magic, Humphrey said, picking up the leather cover of a book whose pages had long since turned to wet pulp.
Me too, Clive said. I'm guessing these were all skill books.
Would have been a fortune intact, Humphrey said.
It also might have given us some idea of who inhabited this complex, Clive said. Sometimes a storage room like this will keep the most important items sealed away, so there may still be something to find.
They searched through the long, rotted shelves until Humphrey uncovered a group of metal boxes. Three of the five had been breached, but two looked to be still intact. They were large enough that each could contain several skill books.
We shouldn't open them here, Clive said. The contents are definitely old and maybe fragile. I have tools back at the Magic Society that would let me open them more carefully.
Sounds good, Jason said. Bag them for later and we'll go find this adventurer.
Clive carefully lifted the boxes with Humphrey's help and stowed them in his storage space.
I'm a bit worried about the state we'll find this adventurer in, Jason said as they left the training hall and its hidden storeroom behind. What if he's just been eaten, and all we find is his badge inside a monster?
Then that's what we bring back, Humphrey said. They continued exploring the flooded and debris-filled lower level. Rather than continue on through the filthy icy water, Clive was now sitting atop his tortoise familiar. Not long after leaving the training hall, something came shambling slowly towards them.
Zombies, Humphrey said. How can there be zombies?
There were dead bodies making a slow, stumbling path in their direction, looking like skeletons stuffed with mud. Humphrey lunged forward, using his smaller sword in the confines of the tunnel. He still made short work of the animate corpses. Clouds of mist rose off them as Humphrey cut them to pieces.
Why wouldn't there be zombies? Jason asked as Humphrey walked back to them, coughing from the zombie mist.
Honestly, I'm surprised it took them this long to show up in a place like this.
The Delta is flush with vital energy, Clive explained. The water coming out of the astral space that feeds the river is full of it. All that life force prevents undead monsters from manifesting anywhere in the Delta.
Then how are there zombies here?
Humphrey asked, still coughing.
You don't sound so good, Jason said.
He held his hand in front of Humphrey and chanted a spell.
Feed me your sins.
You have cleansed all instances of corpse fungus from human.
Corpse fungus? Jason asked.
What's that?
Humphrey spluttered as he escaped the cloud.
It's a fungus that uses corpses to propagate itself, Clive said. It takes over a corpse, makes it ambulate like a zombie, then blows spores over any living creature it comes across. Not a zombie at all, just a regular dead body being moved about.
What do those spores do?
Humphrey asked.
They grow inside you, Clive said. Kill you, eventually. But there's plenty of time to find a healer or an alchemist, if you don't have Jason on hand.
They waited for the spore cloud to settle, before continuing on. Jason cleansing Clive and Humphrey again, just in case. They followed the tracking stone, closing in on the dead adventurer's badge. It led them to the most ruined part of the complex, where large sections of brickwork had been torn out of the walls, mud encroaching on the rooms and tunnels. At the end of another large hall, all the brickwork from the back wall was gone, with what looked like a giant burrowed tunnel beyond.
What needs a hole that big to get around?
Humphrey asked.
Nothing good, Clive said.
They set off down the earthen tunnel, still knee-deep in water. It didn't seem to bother Onslow with Clive riding on his back, or Jason, who walked along the surface. Humphrey was left to trudge unhappily through water and mud. The tunnel turned out to be fairly short, breaking back into another room of the complex. It was another large hall, very much demolished. In addition to the breach they entered through, much of the brickwork had been torn out. In its place, recessed alcoves looked like they had been dug out by claws, each one stuffed with a dead creature. Most were swamp creatures, although there were a few dead people as well.
This one, Clive said, tracking stone in hand.
He led them to one of the bodies, an elf in tattered armor. Jason took a casket from his inventory, supplied to him by the Adventure Society.
Objective complete. Retrieve the remains of your fellow adventurer, one of one.
While he and Clive placed the body inside, Humphrey was looking around with a concerned expression.
We should take it and go, Humphrey said. Fast.
What is it? Jason asked. The contract wasn't just to retrieve the body, but also kill the monster. If Humphrey wanted to bail out, it was probably bad.
A swamp-dwelling monster whose appearance could be mistaken for a worm burrows deep into the earth and builds elaborate larders to fill with prey, Humphrey said, and Clive's eyes went wide.
Yes, we should go, he agreed. Now.
Jason looked down as a ripple of water came from the corner of the room, spreading over the water that covered the floor. It suddenly occurred to him that he had no idea if all the water was knee-deep. Something bulged up from the surface in the corner of the room. Water poured off its huge mound of a body as it rose up from a submerged tunnel. The creature was a brown, fleshy mass, with five serpentine necks ending in heads like that of a snake, if snakes had a lot more teeth.
Marsh Hydra,
Humphrey said, breathlessly. None of them had felt its aura approach, but now it washed over them with bronze rank strength. It moved to block them from the tunnel they had entered through. Its thick legs ended in webbed claws, poorly suited for land movement. Humphrey could have escaped, but seeing Clive and Jason would be cut off, he moved away from the tunnel to join them. The creature, apparently satisfied at boxing them in, eyed them patiently with its five heads.
Marsh Hydras heal fast, Humphrey said. Combined with bronze rank toughness, our only chance is that you can pile up enough afflictions to kill it, Jason. Clive and I will try and distract it so you can get close.
No need for close, Jason said. I've got some new tricks. Just keep it off me, and I'll get it done. Four tree trunk legs supported the fleshy mound of the Hydra's body, the long necks rising off it like trees on a hill. The creature lumbered towards them, and Humphrey went to meet it. Clive patted Onslow on the shell and pulled a long staff from his storage space. It had a large, clear crystal set into the end, and vibrant red-orange runes that shone like fire carved down the full length. He aimed it at the Hydra like a gun, and a blast of flaming energy launched out, striking one of the Hydra's heads. The runes on the staff dimmed as the struck head shrieked. Its skin was blackened, but the damage appeared superficial. Jason slit the back of his hand with his wristband razor, sending leeches splashing into the water. They quickly made their way across the room to crawl up the Hydra's trunk legs and swarm over its body.
Sanguine Horror has inflicted bleeding on Marsh Hydra. Marsh Hydra has resisted bleeding. Bleeding does not take effect. Sanguine Horror has inflicted leech toxin on Marsh Hydra. Marsh Hydra has resisted leech toxin. Leech toxin does not take effect. Sanguine Horror has inflicted necrotoxin on Marsh Hydra. Marsh Hydra has resisted necrotoxin. Necrotoxin does not take effect.
That's not good, Jason muttered. Even with his aura that penalized resistances, almost every affliction his leeches piled on was shrugged off by the bronze rank monster. Fortunately, Colin offered both quality with quantity, and some of the afflictions were getting through. Jason followed up with spells.
Your fate is to suffer.
Spell, Inexorable Doom, has inflicted Inexorable Doom on Marsh Hydra. Marsh Hydra has resisted Inexorable Doom. Inexorable Doom does not take effect. Jason cast the spell a second and third time, each resisted.
I'm going to need some time, he called out.
Jason would have liked to toss Humphrey his dagger, which inflicted poison and ignored bronze rank resistances. Humphrey hardly had time to switch out weapons, however, and trading the enormous sword that was barely holding its own for a small dagger would likely get him killed. Humphrey's huge sword, dragon-scale armor, and incredible strength were a terror to iron rank monsters, but they were barely keeping him alive as heads the size of his torso snapped at him. Even his strongest attack, the Unstoppable Force, was significantly more stoppable against the power of the bronze rank Hydra. Only the added attention of Clive and his familiar allowed Humphrey to hold out. Through their combined efforts, Humphrey was finally able to cleave off one of the heads.
Watch out for the head growing back,
Clive called out. But to his surprise, there was no sign of it doing so. From what he had read about the creature, its heads should grow back fast enough to see it happening.
Marsh Hydra has regenerated enough health to negate bleeding. Leech toxin has been consumed to reapply bleeding on Marsh Hydra.
In the meantime, Jason was casting spell after spell.
Your fate is to suffer.
Spell, Inexorable Doom, has inflicted Inexorable Doom on Marsh Hydra.
Yes!
With Inexorable Doom in place, and the leeches making slow but constant progress, the afflictions would stack up. Jason raised his hand again and cast one of his new spells.
Carry the mark of your transgressions!
Spell, Castigate, has inflicted sin on Marsh Hydra. Marsh Hydra has resisted sin. Sin does not take effect. Spell, Castigate, has inflicted Mark of Sin on Marsh Hydra. Marsh Hydra has resisted Mark of Sin. Mark of Sin does not take effect.
His Sin Curse was one of the keys to his escalating damage combination. His new spell allowed him to apply it at range, so long as it wasn't resisted. It was the first of Jason's two new spells. The broker he went to had taken a while to find a good trade for the rat essence, as it was not popular with anyone who could afford to be choosy. He could have traded it for a half dozen awakening stones of the fish, but instead went with two stones of the magus. It was a common awakening stone, especially with humans. It almost guaranteed a spell, which humans rarely awakened, with an outside chance of a coveted summoning or familiar power.
Ability, Castigate, Sin. Spell, Curse, Holy. Cost, Moderate Mana. Cooldown, None. Current rank, Iron, 0.00%. Effect, Iron. Burns a painful brand into the target, inflicting slight transcendent damage and the Sin and Mark of Sin conditions. The brand cannot be healed so long as the target retains any instances of Sin. Sin, Affliction, Curse, Stacking. All necrotic damage taken is increased. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Mark of Sin, Affliction, Holy, prevents aura retraction. Cannot be cleansed while target retains any instances of Sin or Legacy of Sin.
How's it going? Humphrey called out.
It's coming along, Jason called back.
If it could come any faster, that would be really, really great.
Jason kept casting spells until his mana ran low, chugged a mana potion from his belt, and started casting some more.
Carry the mark of your transgressions.
Spell, Castigate, has inflicted sin on Marsh Hydra. Spell, Castigate, has inflicted Mark of Sin on Marsh Hydra. Marsh Hydra has resisted Mark of Sin. Mark of Sin does not take effect.
Jason let out a whoop of triumph. The Mark of Sin effect was of little use in the current battle, so it didn't matter if it was resisted. With inexorable doom, Sin, and Colin's necrotoxin in place, the damage would increase exponentially.
"Everything's done," Jason called out. "Stay strong, and we have it."
"I'm not sure if waiting is an option,"
Clive said, his voice enervated. He drank a mana potion, even as he poured his mana into his familiar. One of the runes on Onslow's shell lit up, then dimmed immediately as a cloud rose up out of his shell. Water bullets erupted out of the cloud, pounding into the Hydra. In front of the Hydra, Humphrey was bloody and exhausted, but defiant, pushing on through sheer force of will. The Hydra was doomed now, but it could still take them with it. Jason resumed casting spells, trying to hasten its demise.
"Bleed for me."
Spell, Hemorrhage, has inflicted bleeding on Marsh Hydra. Marsh Hydra is already affected by bleeding. Bleeding is refreshed. Spell, Hemorrhage, has inflicted sacrificial victim on Marsh Hydra.
"First time!" Jason cheered. "Good stuff."
The affliction reduction from Jason's aura had limited effect at the start of the fight, but it penalized resistances further for each instance of the Sin Curse. With the curses now stacking up, afflictions from both Jason and Colin were becoming more reliable, including those from Jason's other new spell.
Ability, Hemorrhage, Blood. Spell, Wounding, Unholy. Cost, Moderate Mana. Cooldown, None. Current rank, Iron, 0.00%. Effect, Iron. Inflicts or refreshes the Bleeding and Sacrificial Victim afflictions. Bleeding, Affliction, Wounding, Blood. Deals ongoing damage by causing or increasing blood loss. As a wounding effect, this condition absorbs and negates an amount of incoming healing, after which this affliction immediately ends. Sacrificial victim, affliction, unholy. Any drain attacks or blood afflictions suffered have increased effect.
The sacrificial victim affliction would help bleed away the Hydra's health, but the massive monster had a lot of health to bleed. Clive had a huge amount of mana, most of which he had thrown at the monster. He no longer had enough to recharge the powers of his rune tortoise familiar. With his afflictions applied, Jason could do little else without wading into melee range. He was confident that would lead to his near-immediate death, probably getting Humphrey killed trying to save him. He had one more spell, but the 30 seconds between casts felt like an eternity.
"Suffer the cost of your transgressions!"
Ability, Punition, Doom, Spell, Cost, Moderate Mana, Cooldown, 30 seconds, Current Rank, Iron, 1.06%. Effect, Iron, inflicts necrotic damage for each curse, disease, poison, and unholy affliction the target is suffering.
Despite the afflictions built up on the Hydra, its resistance to Iron Rank damage prevented the spell from taking full effect. Jason had nothing left to contribute. Humphrey's will was strong, but he had been going full power from the beginning. The Hydra was finally fading, but Humphrey was fading faster. He staggered back one step, then another. It looked like he could barely lift his sword, but he did so again and again.
"I don't think I can hold it," Humphrey called back, despair in his voice.
Jason let out a reluctant groan, then steeled his shoulders.
"I'm coming in," he yelled. "You'll die," Humphrey said, as Jason appeared behind him.
"Then I guess you'd better protect me," Jason said.
Humphrey glanced at Jason, seeing nothing but determination. He turned back to the monster, letting out a wild yell. His wavering stance straightened, waning arms renewed. Where he had been reduced to only defending, he once again went on the attack. Light started shining out of him, the blue-gray of Iron Rank. He didn't notice Jason stepping back into safety.
"I was just trying to get him pumped up," Jason said, looking at the light shining from Humphrey. "What is that?"
"Racial gift transfiguration," Clive said in wonder. "It seems his drive to protect is so strong, it literally changed who he is."
Clive gave Jason a wild grin.
If he can manage that, how can I not make a full effort? He asked.
Clive glared at the Hydra with renewed determination. The red glow of life force emerged from his body and started turning blue as he burned life force to restore his emptied-out mana. Clive's skin turned pale, and he gritted his teeth against the pain, but kept pushing for more mana. Clive dropped his staff into the water and held both hands out in front of him, palms facing out. A magic circle appeared in front of them, turning in the air. It grew and changed, becoming more complicated as Clive pumped more mana into it, then chanted a spell.
Feel the annihilation of reality unmade!
A beam of rainbow light blasted out of the circle in front of Clive, locking onto one of the Hydra's four remaining heads. The rainbow colors faded one by one until all that remained was black. The beam vanished, and the Hydra's head was annihilated as a vortex of darkness replaced it. The vortex sucked in air, causing the Hydra's severed neck to flap like a streamer in the wind as the vortex sucked at it. The spell ended, the dark vortex fading into nothing. The neck dropped limp, as did Clive, who fell to his knees in the water. Onslow gave him a concerned nudge, and Clive supported himself on the tortoise's neck. Jason looked at Clive, who had burned himself out to contribute. He looked at Humphrey, who had given up escape to be the shield between the monster and his companions.
"I don't know what kind of person deserves friends like this," Jason muttered to himself. "But I'm pretty sure it's not me."
A blue-gray light lit up from within Jason, just as it had from Humphrey. Jason looked at the glow shining from underneath his skin.
Outworlder racial ability, interface, has evolved to party interface. Ability, party interface, transfigured from outworlder ability, interface. Interpret reality through a recognizable medium. You have access to a contacts list. You can form a party by sending invitations through the contacts list. Party members can access interface features so long as they remain in the party. Party members have access to party chat and voice chat. These functions have limited range. Quests from the quest system can be shared with party members. Quest only remains available to party members while they are in the party.
You too?
Clive asked wearily, still draped over Onslow's neck. He watched the light shine out of Jason.
I'm not sure it actually helps right now, Jason said.
Clive's spell claiming the monster's second head had marked the turning of the tide. Necrosis was turning the Hydra's flesh to rot as its blood, black with venom, spilled into the water. Humphrey's sword claimed a third head, and the Hydra moved to flee, heading for the submerged tunnel. As the monster was about to plunge into the water, a huge shab rose up from the depths, gaping shark mouth, biting savagely into the Hydra's flesh. The shab then turned into a colourful parrot, flying over to land on Onslow.
Nasty? Nasty?
It said, spitting out black fluid. The injured Hydra was confused long enough for Humphrey to come up behind it and bury his sword in a rear leg. Jason followed, digging into the other rear leg with his dagger. The wound wasn't deep compared to the size of the creature, and his special attack, Punish, only dealt a small amount of necrotic damage. However, every instance of the Sin Curse amplified that damage, and the Hydra had been accumulating them for a while. The flesh blackened and withered, shrinking away from Jason's slicing blade. Side by side, Jason and Humphrey laid into the crippled monster until it fell still.
Quest. Contract. Fallen comrade. Objective complete. Eliminate the monster that killed your fellow adventurer. 1 of 1. Reward. Awakening Stone of Absolution. Jason Asano. Reward. Awakening Stone of the Champion. Humphrey Geller. Reward. Ring of the Hydra. Clive Standish. Quest complete. All party members receive 100 Bronze Spirit Coins. 1,000 Iron Spirit Coins.
Humphrey went over to Stash the Parrot, who was hopping up and down excitedly on Onslow's shell.
Stash chase worm! Stash chase worm!
The parrot flew towards Humphrey, transforming into a puppy mid-air and landing in Humphrey's arms. Humphrey was covered in Hydra blood, but Stash didn't seem to mind the mess as much as Humphrey's armor. Humphrey dismissed the hard-scale armor, and Stash snuggled into his chest as Humphrey scratched him behind the ears. The three adventurers stood exhausted, looking at each other and the dead Hydra.
"Clear eyes, full hearts," Jason said.
"What?" Clive asked.
Jason waved a dismissive hand.
"Ah, we'll deal with that later," Jason said.
Chapter 88. The Nature of Absolution. Rufus was at the Geller estate, discussing property development for the Geller Family Remore Academy Joint Training Facility. In a conference room, he sat alone across a table from three members of the Geller family.
"There is plenty of unclaimed, undeveloped territory adjacent to the Geller estate," Rufus said. "Just give us a location that works best for the changes you want to incorporate, and we can go from there."
"I know you have a good relationship with Danielle," the man across the table said. "That doesn't mean we'll just acquiesce to your every need."
Rufus ran a hand over his face.
"What exactly is it you think I want you to acquiesce to?" Rufus asked. "This joint venture has already been agreed to, and as for the details, I literally just said that we will adapt to your needs."
Rufus got to his feet, placed both hands on the table, and leaned towards the man on the opposite side.
"Clearly you are part of whatever internal faction within the Geller family was against this agreement from the outset, and you ended up negotiating the details as part of accepting the proposal at all. I don't care about that. I have no interest in playing these games, and I'm not going to be a pawn in your family's internal politics."
Rufus stood up straight and adjusted his light jacket.
"I know you want to drag this on as long as possible, so let me be explicit. When I come here tomorrow, I want to talk to someone who will actually work on this project instead of stalling it out. If that doesn't happen, then the Remore Academy will undertake the venture without Geller family involvement."
The man in the middle of the Geller family representatives gave Rufus a smile that didn't reach his eyes.
"Are you sure you have the authority to make that decision, young Master Remore?"
"I'm not an aristocrat," Rufus said. "So that's Mr. Remore to you. If you think I have anything less than full authority over this undertaking, then keep pushing and see what happens."
Rufus took his unopened document satchel from the table and headed for the door.
"Mr. Remore."
"I'll listen to what you have to say when you have something worth listening to," Rufus said, without turning around, and walked out the door.
Rufus was unhappy as he left the building, but calmed down walking through the Geller estate. The fresh air and smell of verdant plant life improved his mood with every breath. He stopped short as something strange appeared in the air in front of him.
"You have received a voice chat request from Jason Asano. Accept. Yes, no."
"What?"
The whole way back through the Delta, Clive had been pulling items from his inventory to look at them through Jason's interface ability. After he almost crashed the airboat into the side of an embankment road, Jason kicked him from the party so he would concentrate on driving.
"Can I see that new ability of yours?"
Jason asked Humphrey. They had learned that they could give party members permission to see each other's abilities, which had Clive setting up plans to use Jason as a cataloging tool.
"Sure," Humphrey said. "Ability, Hero's Drive, transfigured from Human Ability, Human Ambition. Essence abilities advance at an accelerated rate. Enemies do not gain additional resistance and damage reduction against your abilities for being higher rank. When fighting higher ranked enemies, or when significantly outnumbered by enemies of the same rank or higher, time before abilities can be used again is reduced. Gain mana and stamina over time while this ability is active. When this ability is triggered, gain an immediate burst of stamina and mana. This can exceed normal mana and stamina limits so long as the ability remains active."
"That's not bad," Jason said. "I wouldn't start running around looking for bronze rank monsters to fight, though."
"No fear on that front," Humphrey said.
"You say that," Jason said,
"but I can't help but think you'll go diving in every time someone needs help."
"That does seem like exactly what you do,"
Clive agreed. There is one more thing I'd like to try out, Jason said. He opened up his new contacts list. Most of the names were listed as out of area, his eyes lingering on the names of his family. Very out of area, he muttered to himself. Moving through the Delta on an airboat, they weren't too far from the Geller family estate. That placed several names on the list within range, including Rick, Phoebe, and Danielle Geller. Rufus was also in range, which meant he was probably at the Geller estate himself. Jason tapped on his name. You have sent a voice chat request to Rufus Remore. Voice chat with Rufus Remore has been initiated. Party member Humphrey Geller has joined voice chat.
Jason?
Rufus's voice had a slight distortion, like he was using a low-quality microphone.
G'day, Rufus. Not sure if you can hear me over the sound of the airboat.
I can't hear any airboat. What is this?
I had a racial gift evolution, Jason said. Humphrey, too.
Hello, Humphrey said.
What happened? Rufus asked.
We fought a bronze rank monster, Jason said. Well, I say we, but Clive and I mostly watched Humphrey do it.
That's not the case at all, Humphrey said.
I don't suppose you're in the market for a funky bronze rank whip, Jason asked. We looted it from the monster and decided to sell it and split the proceeds.
What were you thinking, taking on a bronze rank monster? Rufus scolded. Tell me everything.
You're breaking up, Rufus, Jason said. Looks like we're about to go out of range.
What does breaking up mean? Rufus asked.
What's that, Rufus? Jason asked.
Ksht, ksht, ksht.
Jason closed the connection. So, he said, turning to Humphrey.
What do you think you'll get from your awakening stone?
Should you have cut off your power like that?
It was bad reception, Jason said.
I'm not sure what that is, Humphrey said, other than an obvious lie.
I can do the ritual of awakening for those stones you got, Clive said. Although maybe you should do it, Jason. You could probably use the practice.
Works for me, Jason said. Do I get a say in this? Humphrey asked.
The ritual of awakening is basic stuff, Clive said. It'll probably be fine.
What do you mean, probably? Humphrey asked. Clive's study at the Magic Society campus was like an old second-hand bookstore combined with an antique shop, neither of which had been organized very well. Stacks of papers were stopped from falling off chairs by stacks of books piled on them. Strange curios were placed absently on shelves, stands, or inside glass cabinets.
Is this safe?
Humphrey asked, looking around. His eyes could see the invisible magic, Jason couldn't.
There's a system,
Clive said, unconvincingly, as he shuffled through papers.
You know, Jason, the Magic Society would definitely pay you to use your ability for the cataloguing of items and abilities.
How much? Jason asked.
Not adventurer money, Clive said.
Decent, though.
I'd rather fight monsters than bureaucrats, Humphrey said.
I think I might be with you there, Jason said.
The Magic Society does important work, Clive said, still searching through the room for something. You both have monster record tablets, don't you? What about the Essence List tablet? You think they just happen? People work hard to provide the information you rely on to stay alive, but adventurers just dismiss them as dull functionaries.
Jason and Humphrey looked at each other and shrugged. That's a fair cop, Jason said.
I never thought about that,
said Humphrey.
No one ever does, Clive said unhappily. Ah, I knew it was around here somewhere.
He dug out a magic wand from what looked to be a basket of sticks and led them to a door. Beyond was a room as sparse as the one outside was overstuffed. The only thing in it was a plain metal table in the middle.
Close the door behind you, please, Clive said.
From his storage space, he took out the two boxes they had retrieved from the underground complex and placed them on the table. He began moving the wand he had dug out from his study over the first box. Untold years' worth of muck rose off of it, right down to the oldest filth that had ingrained itself into the metal. The muck drifted through the air to the side of the room,
collecting into unpleasant spheres. Leaving the spheres floating in the air, Clive carefully opened the box. Inside, the contents had been kept intact by the box's remnant magic. Clive took out 3 identical skill books and sat them on the table.
"The condition is good," Clive said, opening the cover of each to look at the title inside. "The Way of the Reaper," he said. "Form 1, Way of the Hierophant. A martial art skill book?"
"Yes," Jason said. "My martial art. Part of it, anyway. There are 5 forms in total." "There were 5 boxes," Humphrey said.
"Just this one is the size of a normal skill book," Clive said. "No wonder they split them up. A collected work would be huge."
"No kidding," Jason said. The second case had another 3 books, this time the 3rd form of Jason's martial art.
"You said you don't know where your martial art comes from, right?"
Clive asked Jason.
"That's right," Jason said. "My friends know, but they're keeping it secret for now. Something to do with a contract they took before I met them."
"I'll do some digging, see what I can find," Clive said. "In the meantime, how about we get an awakening ritual going?"
Inside one of the Magic Society's dedicated ritual rooms, Humphrey was standing in the middle of a magic circle, holding an awakening stone in his hands.
"Good," Clive said approvingly. "You did well, Jason."
The awakening stone disappeared into Humphrey's hand. His eyes glowed with swirling blue and gold light as the magic settled into him, then dimmed.
"Party member Humphrey Geller has awakened the Dragon Essence ability. Spartoy, Humphrey Geller has awakened 5 of 5 Dragon Essence abilities. Party member Humphrey Geller has awakened all Dragon Essence abilities. Linked attribute, recovery, will advance in conjunction with lowest rank Dragon Essence ability. Party member Humphrey Geller has 2 of 4 completed essences. Ability, Spartoy, Dragon. Summoning, ritual, summon. Cost, very high mana. Cooldown, 6 hours. Current rank, iron, 0.00%. Effect, iron. Summons 3 Dragon Tooth warriors."
"Finally," Humphrey said.